While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia. Welcome to Eagle FM, where informed debate meets national purpose. I am your staffer, Happy Juju, and this is On The Reading News Analysis, your weekday platform for structured, in-depth examination of the issues shaping our country. It is Friday, the 13th of February, 2026, and a time when Namibia's governance landscape is under close public scrutiny, when economic decisions carry heightened consequences, and when communities are demanding measurable progress in service delivery, the need for careful, fact-based analysis has never been greater. Now, On The Reader, it is built on a simple principle. Headlines tell us what happened. Analysis help us understand why it matters. Each afternoon, we take a deliberate pause from the noise of the news cycle to assess policy direction, institutional accountability, economic indicators, and the broader social impact of national decisions. We explore how legislation translates into implementation, how budgets translate into services, and how leadership decisions influence the everyday lives of Namibians across every region. From 1300 hours to 1430, we bring together subject matter experts, policymakers, analysts, and members of the public to ensure that discussions remain balanced, evidence-driven, and solutions-orientated. You can follow the conversation across Eagle FM frequencies, streamers via the Eagle FM website, or download the Eagle FM app and participate through our WhatsApp platform as we incorporate your insights in today's discussion. Now, whether you're joining us from Windhoek, the coast, the north, the south, or beyond our borders, thank you for making us part of your afternoon. This right here is On The Reading News Analysis on Eagle FM. Now, let's get right into today's stories. Today, the world marks World Radio Day, observed each year on 13 February to honor radio as a powerful and enduring medium for information, dialogue, and community connection. Now, the day was proclaimed by UNESCO in 2011 and later adopted by the United Nations General Assembly, celebrating radio's unique ability to reach audiences across social, economic, and geographic boundaries. Now, in Namibia, radio remains one of the most widely consumed sources of news and public debate, with numerous stations catering to diverse audiences. Now, among this is Eagle FM, a privately held commercial talk radio station founded in 2019 that has carved out a niche as a platform for in-depth discussions on current affairs, politics, business, and social issues. Eagle FM broadcasts live and online, offering live talk shows and phone-in debates designed to engage listeners in national discourse. Eagle FM has been noted for its talk-focused format and analytical programming, attracting listeners who prefer discussion-driven content over music-heavy platforms or formats. Now, it features local and international news, and its apps and websites have broadened and reached beyond traditional FM boundaries. Now, as World Radio is celebrated across Namibia, broadcasters and regulators alike highlight the need for professional standards, ethical journalism, and adherence to licensing rules, risk areas that impact public trust and the credibility of radio is a vital source of information. Now, today's festivities remind listeners that while radio remains a core part of Namibia's media ecosystem, maintaining ethical broadcasting practices and compliance with regulatory frameworks is essential to keep that trust alive. And of course, I caught up with the ombudsman, that is Mr. Baselis Dia Kunga. Let's take a listen to that conversation that we had.
Welcome to On the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, good afternoon to you and your listeners. And thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, sir, to have you with us. Now, of course, today we're celebrating World Radio Day, and radio still remains one of the most powerful and effective mode of communication, even in this modern day. What a surprise, I think, or we would expect it to have faded out by now, but it's still making strong airwaves across the continent. Now, of course, we're talking about Radio Day and ethics. Why is ethics still very important in this day and era? And how perhaps could journalists and presenters present themselves in an ethical way?
Okay, I think I cannot agree with you more when it comes to radio is the most important means of communication or disseminating information. As you may know through your history, that back in the days, it was only radio where people could get the information or listen to news. And in some countries, government have actually distributed free radios to their population so that they cannot be left behind when it comes to information. So, yeah, to answer your question on ethics. Ethics is actually the mother of all those that guide the communities. You know, we have the morality, we have ethics, we have the law. These three, they actually guide the community for them to live in a well established rules and orderly manner. So, but the ethic aspect is the mother of the two.
Yeah.
All the law, they must comply with the ethics of the society. The same with the morality. Morality must actually comply with the ethics of the society. So that's what ethics is all about.
Now, talking about ethics, and of course, as we are in the modern day, we have now different people playing their part in terms of radio. And yeah, it's behind the scenes goes, it's more than just the presenter that speaks. We have other people as well. But then again, when we're talking about presenters and journalists, how perhaps can they ensure that they stay grounded ethically in their reporting? And how perhaps can we regulate this? I mean, we do have the Health Professions Council of Namibia, which regulates nurses and those in the medical fraternity. How about in the media fraternity? I mean, we get also them having to go for CD points. What is being done for journalists, perhaps, to ensure that they stay grounded and they stay educated and they stay relevant and they don't go off topics as well?
Yeah, thank you for that question. I think, first of all, I must say that I'm not really a learned person in the media area, but looking from your question is that my first point really is to say that, first of all, it's supposed not really to be a challenge in that profession, because most of the journalists are actually qualified people who have graduated through their careers, and they are supposed to know their ethical standards of reporting. And the second point is also in terms of our setup in Namibia, we have the constitution that actually talks about freedom of media freedom, and when you look at the constitution that provides for media freedom, it is actually in chapter 3. That chapter 3 is actually the one that we as Namibian have regarded that we cannot mandate. In fact, even government cannot interfere with that right.
Mm.
It's actually considered as a negative right. Negative right means government must actually refrain from interfering with that right. And that is why the media themselves, who are in that space, they must now enjoy that right by actually executing those freedom in an ethical manner. As I said earlier, since it is not just a profession, it is actually a very serious profession because they have to accountable to their public, you know. In media, you are not accountable to anybody else except to the public that you are actually providing the information.
Yeah. Mr. Besalis, of course, being a radio day, what responsibility would you say everybody has towards radio? I mean, there are people that still very much listen to radio and rely on radio for information. Perhaps, what is the responsibility of the people out there? Should they just take everything that they hear through radio to be correct and the right thing? Or perhaps do they have a responsibility to verify such information as well?
Well, that is a very important question because it now boils down to the media itself, the journalism itself. You must remember that for people to trust the media or the information that they are receiving through media, radio, it must come from a source which is already trusted. So that's why the journalism, the value of journalism and the standard must be set higher by the profession itself, yeah? And that's why I was saying that this self-regulation, as we call it, it is in your own interest as a journalist to set this standard so that you can regulate yourself. And you must then be accountable to the public. So once you believe in the principle and the value of reporting, then obviously the people will trust your information that you are actually putting through the media.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So in other words, The public don't need really to do homework to check whether this information is actually
verified.
The balance report, the balance reporting should be actually the cornerstone of value journalism. Yeah. So you, as a journalist in the profession of journalism, you must actually set the standard. So that whenever the public get information, they will then confirm or know that our media in this country, they are already have set the standard very high. So they don't report just for the sake of reporting, but they do background check, and they also give the other party a right of reply. Yeah. So what we are getting is actually polished. So that should be the culture. And that's why the law or the government is irrelevant in the question of self-regulation. Because the law is clear. The law is clear and the government's policy is clear. They don't want to interfere with your right. You have to just operate on a basis of trust.
Indeed.
I think you understand what is the basis of trust.
Yes.
The basis of trust does not mean that you must have a policeman who always check on you. So you must know that every time you do your things, you must do it right, ethical, in terms of your profession, in terms of your standard. So that's basically what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Now, being the ombudsman, say, how would you say the media can work along, journalists, the presenters also can work along with the ombudsman to safeguard human rights and also investigate maladministration as well as combat corruption within our country? How perhaps could they effectively work together to make sure that this that Namibia is preserved?
Yeah, before I get to that question, I think I need to make another point. You see, as I said, that journalism or value reporting or balance reporting in Namibia should not be the problem, because we know that journalists are professional people. But that actually is not true in the real world. Because in the real world, the challenge in the real world is that you will have some challenges in terms of other factors. For example, you will have the issue of financial interest that comes from strong business sectors, and also from pressure groups, So these are the challenges that will then sway balance reporting. And also the other point is the issue of management of the media house. Some media house have management that actually do not really want to follow the policy as it is supposed to be, and as such they then want to please their sector of the society which they're reporting for, which they want to, you know. So now coming back to your question of whether journalists can assist the ombudsman's office to report matters of maladministration. In fact, as you said earlier on, that radio is a very good tool for disseminating information. But now we have moved from radio only, but to other media also, to other form of media, platforms like print media and social media and television. So all these are actually doing balanced reporting to different sectors of the community. So because the ombudsman don't really go to the community and start telling them what he is doing every day, but we are busy every day. So we can only be assisted by the media to send our message across to the population. So it is, there's no doubt about that cooperation or working together. It will be welcomed. And then as I speak to you now, we have what we call online newsletter that comes out every quarter.
Yeah.
That helps us also, that media must actually check on our online website, so that we can actually pick up what news development we brought up in our office. So yes, we rely heavily on media so that we can actually inform the public as what we are doing in the media.
Indeed. Quite interesting. Now, Mr. Basiles, considering that it becomes quite a point of interest when you notice that even the top leaders themselves, they do pay attention to the media. And of course, that if anybody nowadays wants to be up to date with news, even outside the borders of Namibia, then they will have to keep up with the media in order to know what is going on. But then outside they also have a role to play. But and again, we do, you spoke rightly about something where I'm also driving to now. We do have media houses, even big media houses outside the borders of Namibia, that sometimes drive a propaganda, tries to influence the people to think a particular way, to do things a particular way, or in favor of a particular person. How then perhaps do we balance that? How do we, those who consume the news, then be able to then have a correct narrative which is not distorted, which is not influenced by propaganda?
Okay, that's a very interesting question. And I just want to go back to what I started to say earlier on.
Yeah.
You know, in my view, journalism is like a manufacturing company of any product.
Mm-hmm.
If you take, for example, a manufacturing of car, of cars, then what you want to see, if you are manufacturing cars, you need to have a quality control department to make sure that those cars are of good quality so that the people can trust the product of those cars.
Indeed.
So it's the same with journalism. If you have a country like Namibia that operates under the rule of law, the constitution, which talks about media freedom and also the rights of the citizens, that you should actually take into consideration their rights in terms of not to defame them or to disseminate false information, then obviously that is the route to go. You need to have the strong body that actually regulates that industry. And I'm going back to the issue of self-regulation again, because that self-regulation is a mechanism to set a standard for reporting and journalism in a country. And that must be set at the higher standard, which includes that you must believe in those principles. Yeah. And secondly, it has to, you have to hold yourself accountable to those standards, meaning you must implement them. Yeah. So there is only two parties when you talk about the self-regulations.
Mm-hmm.
It is the media itself, the media houses itself, and the public that you serve. You don't worry about any other things, as I said. Because the other things like law and the government are clear. Their position is very clear. It's outlined in the constitution.
Yeah.
So that is actually, in my opinion, self-regulation is not happening as it should be.
Mm.
And it is what I said about that we live in a real world, not in the ideal world.
Yeah.
And it is a challenge because it doesn't mean that when the Constitution guarantees media freedom, that you will not have individuals who are unhappy or who are also trying to push you into certain directions. It happened because the real world is just a real world.
True.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Now, Mr. Basiles, your last words to the media fraternity out there, everybody that works in the radio specifically, on this as we celebrate World Radio Day today.
Well, I think my last word would be they must just keep doing the good work of disseminating information for the population. Without fear and favor, but they must really do a balanced value and balanced reporting in the country is very important so that journalism in Namibia can be then be trusted.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mr. Basiles Tiakunga, thank you so much for making time for us right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. All right. Okay.
And of course, we post right here and take a trip to the marketplace. So back with more. Stay tuned to right here on the Radar News Analysis.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know, a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national.
Fall in love with the best prices at WB. Get 500 gram Bokomo cornflakes for $31.99. 2 kg nice rice for only $34.99. 1.5 kg real good mixed chicken portions for $79.99. And 10 kg Bokomo fat cook flour for just $137.99. See more February specials at furmanbrock.com. We care.
Basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And at this point, we're supposed to be engaging Mr. Sadrach Panduleni Shiwameka, who's the media ombudsman, but unfortunately, he is in the north. He has traveled, and I can't really get hold of him at this particular time. But when I still do get hold of him before the news show ends, we will definitely still engage him. But let's move on nonetheless with other news now. The Directorate of Veterinary Services, that is DVS, under the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform today convened a multi-sectoral meeting on foot and mouth disease, also known as FMD, preparedness and response in Windhoek. Now, the meeting held at the Namibian Institute of Public Administration and Management, NIPAM, brought together government officials, veterinary experts, industry representatives, and other key stakeholders to assess the regional foot and mouth disease situation and evaluate Namibia's state of preparedness. Of course, this comes into light as South Africa has been battling foot and mouth disease recently, hence why Namibia has to hold down this discussion to ensure that we are well prepared should anything happen. Now, according to officials from the DVS, discussions are focused on the current outbreak trends within the Southern African region, potential risks posed to Namibia's livestock sector, and existing protocol and surveillance measures aimed at preventing an outbreak within the country. Foot and mouth disease is a highly contagious viral disease affecting cloven-hoofed animals, including cattle, sheep, goats, and pigs. While it does not typically pose a threat to human health, it can have devastating economic consequences due to livestock losses and trade restrictions. Now, during the meeting, participants reviewed broader control protocols, veterinary cordon fence monitoring, vaccination strategies in high-risk zones, and emergency response coordination mechanisms. Stakeholders also explored ways to strengthen collaboration between government agencies, the private sector, and farming communities. Officials emphasized that safeguarding Namibia's livestock industry remains a national priority, particularly given its contribution to food security, rural livelihoods and export earnings. Now, the ministry reaffirmed its commitment to maintaining strict biosecurity standards and urged farmers and the public to remain vigilant, to report suspected cases promptly, and to comply with all animal movement control regulations. The meeting concluded with a call for continued multi-sectoral cooperation to ensure early detection, rapid response, and sustained protection of Namibia's livestock sector against foot and mouth disease. Now let's take a listen to Dr. Kingsley Kwenani, let me say that again, Dr. Kingsley Kwenani, and he's the Deputy Executive Director.
FMD is among the most devastating transboundary animal disease worldwide. It extends beyond animal health, directly affecting national revenue, export competitiveness, food security, employment, and investment confidence. For Namibia, whose livestock and meat industry is deeply integrated into premium international markets, safeguarding our FMD status is therefore very vital. And this, I think, we all know that at this stage, we are already experiencing a threat from our southern neighbor. We have to safeguard this industry. Since 1997, Namibia has maintained a World Organization for Animal Health recognized free zone, FMD free zone, south of the veterinary cordon fence. This status shared by only a handful of African country provides access to lucrative markets with minimum sanitary restrictions, reinforcing our competitive advantage in the global livestock trade. Now, we all know that should we have any introduction of FMD in this country, it means we have a serious problem. We also have experience that we've been having FMD in the northern part of the communal areas, and we know how it feels. We feel it. And I can see the majority of people here, they are my previous clients from my previous engagement. So we know how it feels. So it's something that we cannot allow to come in our free zone. We need to jealously guard against it. However, the recurring outbreaks in the Southern African Development Community regions, including South Africa's loss of FMD free status that we all know, and recently Botswana equally have experienced an outbreak in one of their free zones, it is called Zone 6B, have elevated the regional risk profile. So it looks like our international market at the moment, they are just watching what's going to happen with Namibia. So collectively, we have the mandate to see how we can ensure that we keep the FMD wherever it is, and we have the experience. We have done it in the NCA. We want to replicate that to ensure that we keep it where it is. It does not come into our prison. This development underscores the unpredictable nature of FMD and the urgent need for vigilance. Again, my colleagues will talk about FMD. Those from the NCA operations, I see my big colleagues are there. They understand what is FMD. And in the southern part, we keep on seeing a lot of media segregating. Some farmers are saying, please government, bring the vaccine so that we can start vaccinating. I'm sure my colleagues will clear that confusion today. And I think it's important that we come together, we go through it, and see what we can do as a country, eliminate all the misunderstanding and ensure that we safeguard this industry. Namibia is resilient, is anchored in strong veterinary governance, robust disease control system, and industry collaboration. And this, you can see, is evident today. We requested this meeting on a short notice, and we have a full house. It means we are ready to deal with this situation collectively. When the current epidemiological environmental demands heightened border biosecurity, rapid response readiness, and sustained financial support is also one of the issues that we will put on the table to you to see how we can work together. Government has already acted, strengthening import controls, deploying veterinary personnel, intensifying inspections, enhancing surveillance, and securing cabinet approval for an amount that you have already seen in social media circulating, about 57.5 million. This is what was approved by cabinet at the beginning when we started with the response operation. Infrastructure upgrade, patrols, rezoning strategies, and the establishment of the National FMD Vaccine Bank are underway. Protecting Namibia's FMD status is not solely a government responsibility. And I want to really emphasize this. If we have to safeguard this interest against the introduction of FMD, we have to work together. I can give you an example of what happened in the incident. We've been having recurrent outbreaks. Why? Because we didn't have full cooperation of all stakeholders. Farmers will come, when it's vaccination, they say, this vaccine of veterinary is the one that's making our animals sick. So they hide the animals. At the same time, there's a lot of cross-border movement of animals. It's easier for people, they go to Zambia, they exchange with Kuwaitis, they pay off bills, they have cattle, they come in. Those cattle are not known by anybody. The community knows, but they don't say anything. But that has since changed. And now, I cannot remember when was the last outbreak of FMD. It's now some time ago, because we are working together in the NCA to ensure that we maintain the disease status and also ensure that we continue trading through the community-based trade. And this is what we want to see in the southern part of the country. We cannot leave the responsibility to government alone. It is a shared national obligation requiring coordinated action across public institutions, state-owned enterprises, financial institutions, logistic operations, border agencies, and the livestock industry. This engagement seeks to raise awareness today, strengthening alignment, mobilizing support, and ensure that all critical actors are prepared to safeguard Namibia's livestock sector, protect our economy, and advance our national development goals under the NDP 6. Once more again, I cannot emphasize more in terms of how we seek your hand and support to ensure that we keep the FMD in South Africa where it is, and it should not land in Namibia. For the security forces, please do not accord any visas, entry visas, to FMB. We will need your support, equally from ourselves as veterinary staff. We'll do our part. But farmers unions need to work closely with us, because you have the audience, the biggest audience, that will be affected should we have this introduction of FMD in this country. And equally, that is the biggest population where we need to create awareness so that farmers understand what is FMD, what is the prevention measures against FMD. And please talk to your farmers. We do not need to have vaccine of FMD smuggled in the free zone. On media groups with a lot of farmers, specifically from the southern part, the comments that are there are quite disturbing. And this is, can only be a result of lack of knowledge.
With that, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace.
Why pay more when you can pay less at USave stores? Enjoy nutritious and delicious meals for the whole family. 2 kilogram real good frozen mixed chicken portions for only 99.99 Namibian dollars. 3 kilos Polana pasta, just 74.99 Namibian dollars. 500 grams of Romi 37% fat spread, just 14.99 Namibian dollars. 700 milliliter crystal gold tomato sauce, just 24.99 Namibian dollars. You save, where good food costs less.
And now let's take a listen to Dr. Erastus Hikufe, and he is a chief veterinarian, explaining on what foot and mouth disease actually is.
Okay, what is foot and mouth disease? It is a viral disease for animals. It is highly contagious, meaning it can affect, but it infects a lot of animals in a short period of time. It can actually infect over 80% of the animals in the herd. Sometimes it may even infect 100% of the animals in the herd. It does not kill too many animals. About 1-5% of the animals that are infected might die. But we will explain today why it is so important if it doesn't kill so many animals. It does not affect humans, people. It's an animal disease. It does not infect humans, like what the Quaniani said. It affects humans, but does not infect humans as a disease. It does not cause any health issues to humans. What are the transmission risks to Namibia? Through live animals. Live animals are the primary risk of FMD spreading or transmission. That's why we've stopped importing animals from South Africa since 2019. Meat and other animal products can also bring the virus to Namibia. That's why we stopped importing raw meat and any other products that are potentially risky. Through contaminated livestock feed. As animals are grazing on the pasture, they can contaminate the feed, and the FMD virus has survived in this feed for some time, and therefore bringing them to the animals can also be a risk of transmission. Artificial insemination with contaminated semen. This is also another risk. Some people might want to bring new genetics from South Africa or from anywhere else, but if this semen was not produced very well, it can bring the disease to Namibia. People's clothing, footwear, especially farmers, veterinary officials, livestock transporters, herders, auctioneers, and anyone that might have maybe walked on pastures or crawls where infected animals are, again, this virus can be stuck on your clothing, your shoes, and that's why we are disinfecting at the border. contaminated vehicles. That's why we are spraying cars, wheels, the underparts, because the banana skin is stuck there as well. Illegal importation or smuggling of animals or animal products is also another risk of bringing the disease to Namibia. Theft or animals that are just straying can also bring the disease to Namibia. What are the signs? What are the FMD signs? Okay. Animals will be salivating. Why? Because they will have wounds, blisters, ulcers in the mouth, and that's why you see them salivating. They will have, it's a pointer. So this is a tongue, and that's a wound on the tongue of the animal. This animal will have difficulty in eating, and it will salivate because of that wound. They will have wounds on the gums. They will have wounds on the gums. It will be difficult for them to feed. This is just another wound that is healing on the tongue. And if you look at the tip of the tongue, this is another wound there. And the hoof. The disease is called foot and mouth disease because the lesions or the sites are in the mouth and also on the hooves. So this is another one. These are Namibian pictures from the 2015 outbreak in the north. This animal will have difficulties in walking to go and feed. So they will either lie down, they will have difficulties in eating because of the wounds in the mouth. This was from Zambezi in 2022. And sometimes some animals might die because either from dehydration, they can't drink, or starvation. Treatment. It's a viral disease. There's not really a specific treatment for it. However, the treatment is just supportive. What are the economic importance? The previous two speakers mentioned, I will just go through quickly. Loss of trade. You stop trading. That's why we stop trading in South Africa. Long movement restrictions. Animals not move for a long period of time for marketing. Loss of milk production. If you are farming with the dairy animals, you might lose that production because foot and mouth disease will cause these animals to stop producing milk. Animals will lose body condition. If you have a feedlot with a 5,000 cattle, we are feeding them to gain weight, and if the disease comes, they will not be eating, they will not be walking, they will start losing weight, and we'll have to invest more money on them to bring them to that weight again before they may be allowed to slaughter. That's why people don't want to trade with you if you have foot and mouth disease, because of the production losses. Social implications. In 2015, in the north, there were issues with weddings, even funerals, to slaughter. The animals had to come from the south for weddings in the north, where you have your oxen in the crowd because of animal movement restrictions. Those are the implications. Even lobola, you may not pay lobola because there's no cow to buy lobola, and the father will not be very happy. Another big cost that we almost always forget is the cost to control the disease when it comes. We mentioned this figure in many outings. In 2015, the government spent, of course, all of us as well, with industry, over 180 million to control the disease. That is the cost that we all often always forget to mention. What happens if the disease comes? Of course, we immediately lose the status. If the disease comes, one case in Orange River or anywhere, the whole free zone from Orange River to Oshivelo or Tinsa Beach, that veterinary gate, those veterinary gates, the whole zone will lose the market, will lose that freedom. So we will attempt, when the disease strikes, we will be attempting to contain it to a certain area. This might require creating what we call a containment zone, SP WOHA. WOHA, Dr. Shombe defines, is a World Organization for Animal Health. but they have to approve this one. When we contain the disease in one area, we may start importing from the rest of the free zone. However, these animals that are contained, of the disease that is contained in a certain area, we might need to have a fence around them. But how do we contain the animals in a certain area? That's only if we detect these animals, or rather, the disease early. And that's why the cooperation with farmers and with everyone is needed to report immediately so that we can contain the disease to a small area and then be able to get rid of the disease. Otherwise, if we don't report, the disease will be spread all over and it will be difficult to control. So once the animals are contained in that specific area, it's approved by WHO, we might have to destroy them. It sounds harsh, but this is the effective way of controlling foot and mouth disease. In Germany, they had foot and mouth disease in buffaloes on some farms. They had to destroy all the animals. When you destroy the animal, then the virus is gone. That's what I said. That's why I said at the beginning that the live animal, is a primary source or high risk source of the virus. So we might conduct emergency vaccination. We are not vaccinating. Yes, we are not vaccinating against foot and mouth disease in the south. What I'm saying here is if it strikes, we might have to vaccinate a ring. Let me just go to this picture. The red part, let's say that is a farm that's infected or two farms that are infected. So you conduct your surveillance and the outer line, that can be a containment zone. Of course, it won't be this round. It will depend on the area where the disease is. You can have corners and all that. This is just a picture to depict how a containment zone might look like. So you have to come here and slaughter all these animals, and then in contact as well, the animals that are in contact with those that are infected. So you might also need to first vaccinate the animals around the infected ones. Well, you are vaccinating, why? Because you are trying to stop the spread. You are trying to stop the spread of the disease from spreading further so that it doesn't affect the whole zone. Now, when the zone is infected, when do you regain your status? When do you recover from your status? You can recover as soon as 3 or as early as 3 months. But that's only if you have destroyed all the animals that are infected and those that were immediately at risk from the infected animals. If you slaughter them, get rid of them, after 3 months, you can regain your status. You can also regain your status if you vaccinate all the animals that are infected and those that are in contact with the infected ones, and then 3 months later, you can regain your status.
And with that, let's pause right here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We'll be back with economic indicators and thereafter news beyond the borders of Namibia. Now remember, you can also partake in the news, discussion and analysis by dialing 083-288-401.
Lipurane ngeno wapubwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutete opoewe ekukulile Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala Onongeshefa ya pumbo kukaraya kovano Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka Okukwetira oipindi konu konda doili nawa Nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka Opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabu ili nawa Ninge Fata Fanona, Monica, Ko, Eagle FM, Onora Tatuime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali, Bali, No Heali, Ileko, Berewa, Murane Tatu, Natu, Bali, O Hetatu, Watatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere, countrywide, to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And now, okay, let's make room for this commercial break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I am planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
At my age, you start appreciating things you might have taken for granted before, like good health. I've known from early on that donating blood regularly was indeed good for my health. I'm too old now, but I've done my part in saving hundreds of lives while benefiting my own. You see, my risk of a heart attack, stroke, and cancer was always low because I donated blood.
Call NHB on 061-285-5400. We're about you.
Next weekend day, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere, countrywide, to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events. And basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
And now for some economic indicators. US dollar today is equals to 15.89 Namibian dollars, and £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars and 62 cents. One dirham, that is one United Arab Emirates dirham, is equals to four Namibian dollars and 33 cents. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollar point 20 cents, and one Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. And now for news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa, as they too are talking about World Radio Day, the future of radio storytelling.
For years, radio has remained the most trusted source of information, news, storytelling, broadcast medium for billions of people around the world. But the growth of artificial intelligence has elevated this medium to new heights. And as we celebrate this World Radio Day, how can AI strengthen radio without replacing the human voice and use it ethically to build listeners' trust? Well, in studio with us, we've got Lydia Mchali. She's the manager of SABC Radio Marketing. Lydia, so good to have you. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Leanne. It's so wonderful to be here this morning.
I mean, I look back over time and you sort of see radio from the origins of a crackling wartime bulletin in the 1920s to transistor radios carried across villages to, radios on our cars and dashboards, yeah. And you name it, with little bunny ears.
Yes.
And yet it still remains.
It still remains.
What do you believe is the strength of radio?
You know what? Honestly, I think the strength of radio is definitely that human element and the human connection that radio brings, you know, the presenters and the personalities that are the voice of so many millions of people around the country. Those are the credible voices that our people in South Africa, you know, yearn to listen to every single day. They wake up, you know, 6 a.m, sometimes graveyard shift, to listen to their favorite personality. So I honestly think the strength of radio, you know, remains with the voices behind the mic.
Yeah, it does. And the thing is that, I mean, when we focus a little bit on on SABC News' radio stations. I mean, having a look and seeing 19 radio stations broadcasting to all the 12 official languages.
Yes.
You know, this is not an easy task. And sometimes radio is the only form of information that people get every single day. And it's the SABC that gives them that information. And people, I don't think the people that are connected with devices and digital things and this, that, and the next understand that that is still the only way that people can get information.
No, that's absolutely correct. You know, I mean, but with this technology, especially here at the SABC, we still now have radio in our hand through the medium of SABC Plus. So even if you don't have the old Mzansi Wireless, as some of us call it, we still have the power of SABC Plus in our hand, where we can listen to all our radio stations in all our 11 official languages. So I think that's really the power of radio. Even people in remote areas have got access to radio. It doesn't matter whether they've got a small little, you know, wireless radio, or it's in their car, or like you say, you know, we've got access through radio to millions, 27 million listeners, in fact, through our SABC radio
across
stations.
Across our 19 stations. That's huge. Okay, so let's now focus on AI, because, you know, AI is a disruptor everywhere, and we know this. It's nothing new. But let's talk about the embracing and using AI to strengthen radio. Help us understand how that's being done.
Okay, so first of all, AI has come in and it's really taken the world by storm. And us as, you know, radio practitioners are using it in an ethical way, you know, to give out information credibly, and making sure that the information that we do give out is not false, but is absolutely honest and true and ethical. So with us, with AI, obviously it helps us with, you know, content, you know, creating content, and even things like, you know, paying homage to our legends, you know, some who may have passed. We can actually use AI to kind of bring them back to life, you know, to continue their legacy through the fantastic medium of AI. However, we must always remember that AI is the tool and not the voice. We must remember that that human connection is what remains the power of radio.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I just want to get to understand you better by saying using AI to basically help and bring credibility to radio. How do you do that? What are you actually using it for? Creating content and things like that. How do you use AI to do that?
So for us, I would say, okay, we've got our voices behind the mics, which are the credible voices which we have, but we use AI to amplify that. So we still have the voices behind the mic that are credible, but AI amplifies that. So we want to obviously keep up with the times, and AI helps us to do that in making things more futuristic, but still relevant to our listeners.
Okay. I mean, I suppose it's an interesting look at it. And I mean, I have seen some of these incredible people using AI for real-time translating.
Yes.
So, you know, into different languages.
Yes.
So, I mean, I would be speaking English to you right now as we are now, but somebody, wherever they're sitting, they're
behind,
not understanding
the scenes,
us.
Yes.
They just get it translated through AI into their mother tongue.
Yes.
Now, that is something that, you know, is a very powerful means that could also be used in television.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, with the 11 official languages, like we say, AI is one of those tools that can definitely help us reach more audiences because of the real-time, you know, transformation of voice to through AI. So with our stations, we are, you know, slowly and surely implementing that to make sure that we do get the value out of AI as time goes on.
Yeah, very, very important. I mean, there's quite a big move, which is exciting, about AI's potential. But its efficiency, its broader reach, language inclusivity, better audience engagement. How do we get the audience more engaged with the use of AI?
Well, first of all, I would say let us use our voices to educate our listeners about the value of AI, and make them understand that it is a tool that we can use for credible information.
Yeah.
You know, it is a tool that we can use to amplify, you know, the medium and also amplify the different things that we use AI for, but always remembering that we mustn't use AI for the wrong reasons. You know, there's a lot of things that are going on around us in the world where you're getting untrue and fake facts from a credible person like a president, you know, or, you know, a really, really prominent person. But the message is actually not correct because AI is being used in the wrong way.
Yeah.
So I think from our side, we can use AI to actually educate, inform and entertain, which is obviously part of our radio mandate as well, to use AI credibly.
Do we disclose to the listener that this is AI?
We should, you know.
We must.
We absolutely should to. Because we need to be that voice to allow our listeners to know that, listen, what we are saying is 100% true, it's factual, and it's the honest truth.
Yeah, amazing. But listen, it's a very fascinating conversation and one that we need to even get our heads around a little bit more.
Yes.
Because, you know, it's something.
Still in South Africa, President Ramaphosa commits 156 billion rand for water and sanitation.
So let's get your live update now on what things are looking like in Gauteng. Here's SABC News reporter Lerato Makola with the latest for us. So Lerato, we were just back to back on all of those interventions. Clearly this now signals that there's a glimmer of hope for Gauteng residents. How are things looking where you are?
Yes, indeed, Ramkwelisi, we are here in the streets of Johannesburg in Melville to engage with affected residents, the residents affected by the ongoing water shortages while following President Ramaphosa's State of the Nation address. And you recall that President mentioned that they will establish a national water crisis committee. But we are here in the streets of Johannesburg and it's drizzling here in Melville. But the residents here, they say that they will not be stopped by the water, by the rain. This until their voices are heard. But just to get a sense of what they think about what President Cyril Ramaphosa said, just to get their reaction, what they think. Thank you so much for your time, Sisi. Please tell us your reaction. Give us your reaction. What do you think about President Cyril Ramaphosa's State of the Nation address?
Yeah, so my thinking is like, what pretty and cute words, but pretty and cute words can't flush my toilets. Neither can they give me a shower. So basically, I like what he said, but I'm going to believe it's when we actually have water. I read that they said that we're going to have water by Sunday, but that's something that I'm just really not holding my breath for. So I'm just going to wait and see it happen. And we haven't had water for about 25 days, so that's ridiculous. The fact that we're only thinking about a plan now is ridiculous. And this is not a new problem. Last year, the whole of last year, we had water come and go and weeks of and ends where we don't have water. So the whole the infrastructure is failing. It's not news. The city has known this. There should have been a plan in place. And we're reacting now that like as if this is fresh and we're all surprised about this. So yeah, no, I'm not holding my breath. I just want to see water coming out and me being able to take a shower. Then I'll believe what he said.
And the president mentioned that they will establish the National Water Crisis Committee. Are you confident that the committee will bring change?
I don't know. Again, I'm going to wait and see. These promises have been made before and things don't change. So let's wait and see. If there's water, then we'll believe what they say.
Okay, thank you so much for your time. Well, you see, I just want to bring another resident here who's also affected by the water crisis. She's a teacher. She's going to work after this. Well, thank you so much for your time. Your reaction on what President Cyril Ramaphosa said yesterday about the water crisis.
So today is Friday and it's 9 o'clock and he said there's going to be water back on Sunday. The last I heard, water workers were on strike. Maybe they're back, but I want to see magic happen for there to be water in my taps on Sunday. And I just want to say, I work in a junior school with little children and I was getting dressed up for Valentine's Day to celebrate Valentine's Day. And I realized I have one more pair of clean underwear and I have to go wash my clothes at a colleague. And that is dehumanizing. And I am lucky enough to have a colleague with a washing machine who can offer that to me. There are people who cannot leave their homes because they are disabled or they are elderly. There are people who cannot afford to fill up JoJo tanks or buy water in the shops. We are here because there are members in our community who cannot protest, who cannot get substitution so that they can be on TV to make a statement.
And earlier on when I interviewed you, you were a bit emotional. If you could just give us a picture of how this is affecting you.
I've grown up in Johannesburg my whole life. My parents are from here. you know, they in their own right were activists against apartheid. I'm not going to say they were struggle heroes, but they were there. And Joburg is a huge part of our country's history and so integral into what keeps our country alive. And we cannot let the biggest center of economy and business and culture be destroyed because we don't have water. And that's why I got emotional, because Johannesburg deserves to live.
And what change would you like to see ahead of a local government election? Maybe what change would you like to see from the leadership?
Accountability. To be honest, if the Premier had said, I was insensitive and I didn't think, that would have been a better apology than we are all inconvenienced and it is a hardship. And I would just like to say, Mr. Premier, if you hear this, lack of water is not an inconvenience. It is an infringement on human rights according to the UN. We have not had the UN recommended daily amount of water coming out of our taps for 25 days. My partner and I are lucky enough that we can afford to buy and supplement our water. But there are many people in Melville and beyond who cannot do that, who run around looking for municipal trucks, who follow location pins, who work off community guidelines. And it's
Meanwhile, the mining sector anchors Zambia's forex market in the fourth quarter of 2025.
The mining sector has continued to anchor the foreign exchange market, boosting dollar inflows and strengthening international reserves. Bank of Zambia Governor Dr. Denny Kalialia says the mining sector remained the largest source of foreign exchange in the fourth quarter of 2025, with the sector doubling its tax payments.
Exchange market, I mentioned that supply of foreign currency has improved in the market and driven mainly by the mining sector. So what we note is that despite the slight reduction in the mining sectors, they still sold over $400 million directly to the market.
And with that in mind, the bank is cautious with what this will entail on the foreign market.
The bank, that means the central bank, was a net buyer of $62.4 million to moderate the volatility in the exchange rate. You see, we sell and buy foreign exchange to manage the volatility as we see fit. If you see that it is moving too fast, then we move in to buy to moderate that.
Away from copper, the central bank also purchased 175 kilograms of locally produced gold worth $23.5 million.
During the quarter, we bought an additional 175.2 kilograms of gold. With that purchase, the total amount that we are holding now is 3,226.51 kilograms.
Dr. Kalialia also gave an update on the credit developments.
The credit to the private sector came down to 15.7 from 21.4%. This was due to loan repayments by firms in the wholesale, construction and the agriculture sector.
As the Bank of Zambia says, the developments points to improved external stability, even as they continue to manage exchange rate volatility and support economic recovery. Ellen Hambuga, ZNBC News, Lusaka.
South Africa cattle farmers are facing major losses following the foot and mouth outbreak.
South Africa's beef exports fell 26% in 2025, despite growing global demand. A major factor was a Chinese ban on South African red meat imposed in May after foot and mouth disease spread across seven of the country's nine provinces. According to industry data, shipments to China dropped almost 70% to just over 1,600 metric tons. China had been South Africa's third largest export market after the UAE and Jordan. But it's not just beef farmers feeling the strain, so are those involved in dairy. When the virus hit his farm in Mui River, James Kean says his seasonal expenses rose by 1 million rand as he tried to contain infections. Infected cows eat less and produce less milk, cutting into already tight margins.
We're producing now about 23,000 litres a day,
because we're quite late in the lactation. But we were doing about 26,000 litres before the outbreak. So it has dropped quite significantly. If a farm is hit with an outbreak during breeding and you have to delay by 6 weeks on a 1,000 cow herd, you could lose 5 million rand just because the cows are calving 6 weeks later. That's the cruelty of it.
Economists warn the outbreak has exposed gaps in vaccine preparedness.
We are having the worst foot and mouth disease outbreak in recent memory in South Africa. And I think that it caught us at a space where we were not as ready in terms of our own domestic vaccine production.
South Africa has now rolled out its first locally developed foot and mouth vaccine in 20 years. The government aims to vaccinate 80% of the country's 12 million cattle while importing additional doses from Botswana, Turkey, and Argentina. There are signs the problem is resolving itself.
There was a shortage of meat initially, but now as supply has increased, it's readily available, and we're finding that customers are actually coming back and buying.
The price increased too much, but we don't have a choice. We come here because of the quality.
And for dairy farmers like James Keane, that's crucial to South African agriculture and the national economy in general.
If we and other dairy farms have to close down, jobs are going to be lost. If the population of animals decreases because there's no backup, the population could halve in 2 years, in which case food prices are going to rise up as well.
For now, much depends on how quickly vaccines can be produced and distributed as the country works to contain a crisis threatening both livelihoods and food security. Joy Kiroki Juma, CGTN.
Uganda is ramping up coffee shipments after a surge in production. Processing plants are handling higher volumes as more coffee heads for the international markets. Over the 12 months to December 2025, Uganda earned about $2.5 billion from coffee exports, up from $1.4 billion the previous year. The increase strengthens coffee's role as a key source of foreign exchange and adds supply to global markets at a time when other major producers are facing climate-related disruptions.
Compared to 3 years ago, when I started trading in coffee, prices have really gone up. That's good on our side. But the challenge is, when farmers discover that prices have shot up, they start picking even the unripe beans.
As prices rise, officials say maintaining quality is just as important as increasing output. The Agriculture Ministry says it's stepping up efforts to monitor standards to protect Uganda's position as Africa's top coffee exporter. Exports are rising, but here at this processing plant, there are concerns about quality. Farmers are harvesting beans that are not fully ripe because they are in need of quick cash, and that could hurt Uganda's coffee image in the long run. Farmers are also grappling with climate change, which is affecting yields. Long dry spells followed by erratic rains are disrupting harvests and reducing incomes.
Climate change is a major challenge for us farmers and traders. Sometimes it rains too hard during the drying season, causing the coffee to fail to dry and even start rotting, which is another loss.
Researchers are developing improved coffee varieties that can withstand harsh temperatures and diseases. With stronger production and tighter quality control, the government hopes coffee will continue to cushion the economy against global price fluctuations and external shocks. Isabel Nakiria, CGTN Kampala, Uganda.
Meanwhile, Egypt gaming market experience. Rapid.
In North Africa, Egypt's core inflation rate fell to 11.2% last month compared to a reading of 11.8% in December. According to data from the Central Bank of Egypt, that slowdown is attributed to a 1.2% drop in the monthly core CPI reading in January, compared with declines of 1.7% in January last year and a decline of 0.2% in December last year. In the meantime, the Central Agency for the Public Mobilization and Statistics, better known as CAPMAS, recorded that the annual headline inflation eased to 10.1% last month, down from 10.3% in December. Monthly headline CPI went up to 268.1 points in January, a 1.5% increase compared to December's reading, mainly due to a 2.7% rise in food and beverage prices. Furthermore, the CBE is forecasting that inflation will continue to decline this year as Egypt gets closer to achieving the central bank's target rate of 7% by the end of the year. Let's stay in Egypt. The gaming markets there, we're talking about video gaming, not betting, video gaming. The video gaming market is reported to be booming. It's growing at 12% a year. Research data shows that in 2024, the country dominated the North African and Middle Eastern region with total spend of around $1.1 billion out of an estimated $2.5 billion in the entire area. For more data on this trend, here's CGTN's Yasser Hakim.
A surge in mobile gaming, increased internet penetration, and the youthful population eager for engaging entertainment experience have seen young people like Ahmed Shazli fixated on the screen for hours.
I started playing 25 years ago. Started with Atari, Super Mario, then PlayStation, and all the new ones launched every year on my screen or mobile phone. It's not only for youngsters. I'll keep playing with my friends till we are in the 50s and older. It's a fun breakaway from tensions in work and life.
E-gaming has flourished as wider internet penetration has attracted more Egyptians. PUBG, Fortnite, and League of Legends are very popular here. Though this North African country lags behind in gaming expenditure per person, 91% of internet usage is by gamers. Egypt dominates the region with roughly 58 to 59% of total gamers in the region, with its gaming market crossing the $1 billion mark out of the regional $2.5 billion market value in 2024. However, Egypt's per-person spending rate is lower compared to Gulf counterparts as driven by mobile gaming trends. With gaming gaining momentum as a mainstream entertainment medium, the industry is likely to see enhanced focus on interactive storytelling and mobile accessibility. Stakeholders will need to adapt to consumer preferences and lifestyles.
We need awareness that gaming is not just for fun, but is an economic tool. For instance, it opens business opportunities for talented designers and programmers to design prototypes that can grow into products, establish startups for gaming, and create jobs for youth. The impact will be very positive for them and for the Egyptian economy.
Saudi Arabia is already steps ahead. It has recently hosted the Esports World Cup with six-figure dollar prizes, attracting international gamers with millions of followers, global online outreach, and lucrative sponsorship deals. There are professional gamers in Egypt who are slowly rising on the international scene.
Most of us resort to streaming on different platforms like TikTok or Switch. You become an influencer, companies offer you ads, sponsorships, or pay you to attend events and market for it. That is how I make my income.
With a population of over 110 million people, Egypt is tapping into this promising market.
The government arm, ITIDA, is planning to set up workshops, training programs, competitions, and funding for prospective talents who can build successful businesses in this field. We are on track.
The target set by the government is that revenue from video games market should increase from $715 million in 2024 to $1.6 billion by 2030. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo, Egypt.
Chinese healthcare goes global.
Into the exhibition halls, the Chinese medical equipment has become one of the most bustling areas. Made in China is earning widespread acclaim through its technological prowess.
Over the past 5 to 10 years, Chinese medical equipment has gained significant favor and recognition across the Middle East. According to last year's data, our exports to 16 Middle Eastern countries reached $2.2 billion, a year-on-year increase of 10%.
Beyond hardware, the export of soft power is another highlight of this year's expo. A group of China's leading hospitals is participating, bringing not just the clinical expertise, but comprehensive smart hospital solutions.
We hope to share our advancements in AI, big data, and data modeling for diagnostic and therapeutic prediction. We've also seen tangible outputs in medical robotics and biomaterials. Sharing these innovations with international peers is crucial, and they have shown immense interest.
Through this exhibition, we aim to present Zhongshan Hospital's advanced concepts in medical care, diagnosis, management, and service, especially our ventures into international healthcare.
Our international peers are quite astonished by China's progress in this field. After our exchanges, many expressed a strong desire to visit China to gain a deeper, more concrete understanding of how AI is practically integrated into daily hospital operations.
Furthermore, experts note that China's experience in healthcare systematic reform also provides valuable insights for the Middle East.
China has been exploring a tiered healthcare system for years, specifically utilizing new telemedicine technologies. Remote medicine, particularly robotic surgery, allows our experts to serve patients more efficiently regardless of distance. This model holds significant practical value for many regions in the Middle East.
From precision surgical robots to advanced digital imaging system, China's healthcare presence in the Middle East has transformed far beyond a simple commodity trade. It has evolved into a profound era of technical empowerment and export of industry standards. Wang Zheng, CGTN, Dubai.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we have come to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reading News Analysis. Do stay tuned for the Onkonana Dingi program brought to you by Louis Ishimi. And after that, don't forget the Home Run Show with Dwight and Helmut from 16:30 and the Business Economic segment with David Chombe from 1800 Hours. From Indafa, happy Juju. It is goodbye. Stay connected to Eagle FM for other programs. Goodbye.